flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
All right, rescheduling with Santana Moss. He's going to join us at 5:30 here on the Hoffman Show. So in lieu of Tana, who's probably stuck in a studio with Logan Paulson, we're gonna give you some Logan Paulson. Take command style here on a Wednesday. We got a fresh preview for you coming tomorrow in the Take Command feed. Full preview of the Commanders and Eagles game. But let's look back one more time at the Lions game and what this Commanders defense was able to do. As you just heard in our chat with Robert Mays, like, a lot of what happened was bad execution and or decision making by Jared Goff. But defenses impact a quarterback's decision making. So what was it that Washington was able to do? And also, how did they shore up that run defense? Logan and I talked about it. And if you haven't heard it yet, you're in luck, because here we go on the Team 980. Take command, Logan Paulson there, Craig Hoffman here. Let's take a look at the Commanders defense to wrap up this here podcast. Logan, a unit that created not one, not two, not three, not four, but five turnovers on Sunday against what was the number one offense in the regular season. 33 points a game, not so much this time around, Logan. And arguably, like, they gave up some stuff, obviously, but I mean, considering if ball is life, maybe their best performance of the season?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And it's one of those games where it's like you knew it was going to be a tough slog for them defensively. Like, that offensive line's amazing. The running backs are great. Jahmyr Gibbs is for sure a future star, if not a current star, however you want to categorize him. And so in a game like this, I think talking with, you know, anybody, Dan, anybody around the team, talking with you, anybody who knows ball, like, this was going to be a tough lift, right? And what did they do? They turned the football over five times, which is great, you know, and I think that's exactly what you need to do. Like, you needed to give our offense the ability to possess the football, control the game, and when you get those turnovers, you're able to do that and keep points off the board too. Like, there's that 2-minute interception that Mike has, which is great. There's the return by Kwon, which is fantastic. There's the end of game interception by Jeremy Chinn, which was really well read by him. He did a great job on that. But, you know, like, the fumble in the red zone, like, all of those.
Oh my God, I forgot about that play till I was watching the film back. I was like, oh, right, that's how this drive ends. That was a monster play by Dorrance Armstrong.
Huge play, because it's 7-3 at that point, and they're going in to score. Like, they're going in to score a touchdown. They're on their 17-yard line. And so when you look at those moments, you're like, "That, what could you ask for them in that situation?" Like, you get Bobby Wagner one-on-one with Amon-Ra St. Brown. He trips. Dorrance Armstrong wins quick, and you get a sack, and the ball's out, and you get the ball back. And I think our offense goes down and score, and that's the first time on that subsequent drive that they lead the game. So in terms of making plays when you have to make them, like, we talked about how this defense throughout the year has been very opportunistic. They've been opportunistic on third down. They've been opportunistic in the red zone. And this is the same script. However, the opportunistic element is that they got the ball out and they were able to turn the football over, which is exactly what you wanted to do. And versus a team like the Detroit Lions, this absolutely had to happen. And they crushed it. They crushed it. And so, like, the fact that they get – so I'm trying to remember the exact game flow here, but it's – if I remember correctly, it's like they go down, the offense scores, and then the next play is after the fumble, Washington touchdown, Detroit touchdown, Washington scores again, but then there's the interception return for a touchdown, and all of a sudden Washington feels like they're in total control of the game, which was –
right.
kind of awesome. And so that's defense. And so we just talked a lot about the offense and how well they played, but the defense versus a very good, very explosive Detroit offense did a great job of being opportunistic in the right moments. And we've talked about this a million times on this show. When you're looking at, you know, the red-green breakdown for the defense, I'll tell you, there's a lot of red in this game. But yeah, the green comes at the right time, and they're big plays, and they're getting the ball back to the offense.
No doubt about it. And there is, I mean, they got five turnovers in this game and still gave up 31 points. And we're like, what a performance. You know, like, it's just, it is kind of wild how that goes, but like, it shows you the power. And that was kind of the story of the weekend, right? The story of the weekend in the NFL writ large was turnovers and how they can undo really great performances, because the Detroit Lions down in, down out were really good offensively in this game, but you can't overcome a turnover, and you especially can't overcome a pick six. Like, it's over. That chapter is written. It is done. We are on to the next chapter. There is no making up for it. There is no anything. And that's the thing, is like, the difference in Washington's defense and Detroit's defense in many ways is like, Washington didn't break. And Detroit did at times. So, you know, if you can just get that stop of, we gave up a 35-yard run to Jahmyr Gibbs, but later in that drive, we forced the fumble. Okay, well, if that 35-yarder had been a 70-yarder, then you don't get the chance to force the fumble. And that, like, in many ways, that's the key to beating Philadelphia, too. Don't let Saquon score from far away. Like, if you can do that, you got a shot against Philadelphia. If not, it's going to be really hard to beat the Eagles, and most teams haven't done it. And so I think that's the thing that's so impressive, is there's just, I don't want to say a comfortability, because it's not like, oh, yeah, here we are, we're getting driven on again, psyched. But, like, there is a, I don't know, a confidence, I guess is probably the right word, that they're going to have to earn it. And then you go get the Sanders still pick in the end zone. You get the fumble in the red zone. Like, they have a knack for, in the bigger moment, when the space gets tight, of doing the thing that they need to do. And that's, you know, the ultimate version of that is this game.
Yeah, and I think Fletch, he says this almost every week on the broadcast, but it's, I think it captures what you're talking about. It's they defend every blade of grass. So, like, these four plays before might not be good, but we still have 10 yards to get to the end zone. We're going to throw down, and we're going to put our foot in the sand and be like, we're going to fight you here. And there is something to that. And it's something I haven't felt in covering the team the last couple of years, is like, there was kind of this, oh no, here we go again. With this team, it's like, we're in the fight, and you might be punching us in the face, but we're going to keep trying to get after it. And you see that with them, and you see it in last week against Tampa Bay, when they get that miraculous turnover by Bobby Wagner on the botched handoff. Like, they could have easily been checked out. We just missed a fourth down conversion. You're back on the field. It's a sudden change. But, hey, we made you right. Here, it's the same thing. And they're driving in that two-minute situation, and Mike Sanders still gets an interception. Like, great job. And then we come out at half and have the opportunity to go down. And It's you're never out of the fight. You got to keep swinging. And it would have been so easy after the explosive play on the reverse to kind of hang your head. But, no, we're back out here. We're getting it done. And we're playing 60 minutes of football. And there's a lot of technical stuff we can talk about, and we'll talk about that in a second. But the mindset of the offense for the Commanders and the defense for the Commanders cannot be overstated. I know you like talking about the psychology of it, and you see the importance of it with this team every time they're on the field, special teams included. Like, we don't really talk about special teams, but talk about just like a big middle finger to Detroit. Like, we're going to directional kick, and we're going to tackle you. We don't care how good you are. Like, we're going to tackle you. And I thought
Detroit
that was just...
Yeah, I was going to mention this at the end of the show, but since you mentioned it here, Logan, do you know how many drives Detroit started outside of, like, on the their side, or the side they'd want to, of the 30-yard line?
I don't know. This is
one, and it's because Zane Gonzalez kicked it out of bounds on the opening kickoff. So every single time Detroit got the ball, it was either off a kickoff where they had just given up points and the Commanders tackled them inside the 30, a touchback on the 30, or the one trespass punt was on the 9.
Yeah.
See, that was it. They literally, you're just like, we're going to come down and we're going to hit you. And there are multiple drives that start inside the 25, if not inside the 20, because of how well the Commanders cover kicks. That is a huge weapon for them.
That's a huge deal. And when you talk about like wins above replacement and like winning percentage in a game, like starting field position is one of those sneaky hidden metrics that people don't talk about a lot, but it's incredibly significant. So if you're able to save 5, 8, 10 yards on a drive, it decreases by full, like, it's not a percentage point. It's 10%, right? You're 10% less likely to score if you start a drive on the 20 as opposed to the 30. So you're giving yourself, you're giving your defense that leg up. And we're kind of like rambling now, but the aggressive mindset of the Washington Commanders in this game, and fourth down conversions on offense or attempts on offense, covering kicks, and just saying, we're going to find every possible mathematical statistical advantage in this game, I thought was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, so let's get into some of the technical stuff and how the Commanders deployed their guys. A lot of zone in this game from Joe Witt Jr. And also a decision with the cornerbacks, which I thought was interesting and one to watch this weekend against Philly, is they don't move Marshon Lattimore around. They didn't have him follow St. Brown. They didn't have him follow Williams. They're just like, you know what? Both these guys are really dangerous. We're going to play sides. And Detroit then tested Mike Sanders still, and you find out that Mike Sanders still is not exactly the best guy to test because he's got tremendous ball skills. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a bunch of decisions that Joe Witt makes in this game that obviously pay off in a big way, but that's one of them. And then the amount of zone was, I think, the one that stood out to you.
Yeah, I think we talked about on the preview show, you and me talked about it.
It's just, sorry if we didn't do it into microphones, everybody.
Yeah, when Jared Goff has the football, he is, this year, this entire year, you watch all his, like, he is very confident. He's very aggressive down the field. And one of the things that sticks out to me in this game plan is I felt like Joe Witt Jr. knew that 100%. And he's like, you know what? You're not going to be patient enough. You're not going to be patient with some of these throws. Like, for example, on the interception that Quan has where it's returned for a touchdown, it's second and 12. The hook player could not be deeper. Could not be more under the dig to Tim Patrick. It's actually like a kind of a corner, like a swirl route. It's like a corner to the comeback. You're kind of finding a zone window there. And he should definitely throw the ball to Sam Laporta. And Sam Laporta is probably going to run for 12 yards. Or not 12 yards, but let's say he runs for 6 yards. You're going to be in third and 7, right? You live to play another day. He is throwing that ball come hell or high water. Like, he is ripping that thing. And I think that is a really good understanding of what Goff does well, but it's also the thing that hurts him tremendously. And you saw that on that play. I think you see it a little bit, excuse me, on the play where Mike Sanders still intercepts it in the end zone. Like, there is a dig that is wide open. There's nobody around it. But he's like, I'm throwing this post. And great job by Mike Sanders still understanding it. But I think Joe Witt Jr., to my eye, I haven't talked to him about this, seemed to really get that Jared Goff is going to be a gunslinger down the field, attacking that deeper, like, middle section of the field. And even when it's not there, he's going to throw it. And on film, it showed up and he completed more than he missed. But in this game, he missed a whole bunch that he, you know, like, obviously that is the difference in the game.
For sure. And it's funny to look at on the Next Gen Stats site, they have like the spray chart of throws.
Yeah.
And he does, like, he throws right a ton in this game. He's like, yeah, avoiding Lattimore's side. But the success rate is just not very good to a lot of this stuff. Where he's only 23 of 40 on the day, 313, one touchdown, three picks. And the touchdown, by the way, what a catch by Laporta. Like, there's so incredible many things in this game that you forget about, incredible, because the game had so many plays. Commanders, like, there's almost 100 plays of film for the offense in this game for Washington. Like, you just log onto the NFL Pro, and I'm like, I got to watch how many plays? 96? Yeah. What the hell? But for Goff, you know, he doesn't have anything deep to the left. He's got nothing deep to the center. He's 2 of 2 to the right deep, technically. Although I don't know exactly how this spray chart works, considering the deep. I guess technically they're counting the Sanders still interception to be the middle of the field. But yeah, like they were able to kind of funnel his completions into certain areas and limit the damage. And of course, they still get some explosives. They kind of manufacture some of those explosives. But I think the fact that Washington played well enough down in, down out, that Ben Johnson felt the need to keep going back to his trick play bag and then ultimately went to it one too many times, like, is something that is a compliment to the Commanders' defense.
Yeah, I think so too. I think to me, it's Ben Johnson understanding. And again, I haven't talked to anybody about this. This is just an observation from the game. Watching him prior to this, like, Jared Goff is excellent off of play action. He's excellent off chunk plays. He's aggressive on third and long situations. Like, really, he's had a tremendous year. But he's not a guy that's going to like methodically move you down the field, in my observation. I'm sure he has plays where he's done that, but it'd be interesting to watch like his success rate, or look up his success rate on 2-minute drives or whatever, like long kind of dink and dunk Joe Burrow-esque type drives. And so I think when you watch him in the 2-minute in this game, he's so reluctant to check the ball down. He's so reluctant. You have Jahmyr Gibbs, you have Amon-Ra St. Brown, you have a couple of the most dynamic people, you know, at making people miss underneath. Like those checkdowns, if you hit them in rhythm, are explosive chunks, but you're so focused on getting the ball down the field. It's Tampa 2, and like it's an extreme version of Tampa 2. It's not going to happen. Check the ball down. And I think I felt like the Detroit Lions offensive coordinator really understood that that's not what he wants to be. So we need to find explosive chunks. And when you're looking for explosive chunks, like you kind of get deep in the trick bag. And I think it's one of the reasons they call a lot of trick plays is because it helps them manufacture these chunks down the field. And when you can't hit them, I think it shows the limitation of an excellent football player in Jared Goff. Let me be very, I think he's had an excellent year, MVP yeah. caliber type deal, but he's not perfect. And this is, I think, where you see some of his imperfection.
And if you can speed him up, like he makes yeah. mistakes. Like this is kind of was Sean's thing with him in LA. And like there's, it hasn't come up a ton in Detroit because their offensive line's so good. But if you can speed him up, and I think one guy that deserves a ton of credit for how he played in this game is John Allen. Like John got after it. He was the guy that got most consistent pressure per some of the next-gen stats and like the tracking data. And I think it shows up on film at times. I thought was pretty good against the run. There's a couple of really nice plays where he's able to kind of play the guard that's blocking him down the line of scrimmage, string out the run, and do what he needed to do. But this defensive front, I think John had a really good one. Obviously, Dorrance, a couple of huge plays. And then, dude, Dante Fowler was a maniac. Yeah. Points in this game, and to see, I think the, again from like a storytelling element, the guys that really won this game in so many ways, like of course John Terry, like those guys deserve shout outs, guys that were here, but like this is another Adam Peters is the executive of the year game where yeah. it's like you get Dorrance, you get Dante making huge Frankie. Plays. Frankie makes a couple of plays. Bobby's obviously playing like Bobby. But just on down the list.
Mike Sanders still in the draft.
I was going to say, then the draft picks. Like, and the irony of this being in Detroit where the draft actually was. Like Jaden and Mikey being probably the two most important players in this game. And the fact that these are rookies that you took in two of your first, what, three picks? Like, it's just Adam Peters. Good job, dude. Like, congrats. Congrats. I know this is breaking news to you because your team's going to the NFC Championship game, but you've done a good job, sir. You've done a good job.
No, absolutely. And it's, I think giving Adam Peters a shout out is very appropriate because of all the stuff that he's able to, and the hit rate. I mean, it feels like every person, you know, Biotis has a good, like, every person that you've brought in and you've paid and you kind of were like, got them on, you know, very team-friendly deals are all of a sudden, it's like, wow, look at this. And, you know, it'd be interesting to talk to him like kind of behind closed doors and be like, did you know it was going to be this good? I'm sure he'd be like, no, because no one knew it was going to be this yeah. good. But like the fact that the coaching has developed them, they found roles for these guys, that relationship between him and Dan just seems to be on point already. Is just incredible. And so, yes, it's awesome that all of those guys were contributing. It's great to see older guys, you know, like John did a great job. I thought Duran had some really nice plays in this game as well. You know, even Jeremy Chin, I know he misses the tackle in the long run, but he has the interception late, just kind of makes up for it. Yeah. So lots of big plays in this game. Lots of, and again, I go back to the thing that I love watching the most is just the consistent effort. The consistent yeah. physicality, and they're just going to get better at it. And I can't wait to watch them go against a team that kind of prides themselves on being like the bigger, badder bully in Philly. And I, you know, we're going to talk about that game on Thursday, but it's just,
I can tell you're chomping at the bit. You want to talk exciting. About that game so bad.
It's exciting.
So bad. I can't wait for it. Can't wait for that Thursday show. Last thing real quick, cause this is also super relevant to Sunday's game and Thursday's show, but Commanders did a much better job in the second half against the run. How they turned the tide. Part of this is just game flow and game yeah. script, but yards per carry and such, like they're much, much better in that second half. What adjustment did Joe make? Because this has been a thing that he's been able to do at times. Like they have really flipped yeah. the script on some run games in the second half. What was the adjustment they made this time?
So again, we've talked about this a ton, and you've already alluded to it a little bit already. It's when they are ahead you dictate to the offense a little bit more. So there's a lot less of like two tight ends, big personnel. Let's like drive these guys off the ball. Those runs that were kind of murdering them in the first half, you don't see them as much because it's more 2 minutes stuff. They have 17 plays of 2 minute in the second half of this game, right? Like you're not going to see a lot of runs in that look, right? And so that's a huge element. And I think when you look at the Philly game too, it's the second Philly game, like they made some adjustments, but it's really just like kind of getting a beat on what they're doing, guys getting a feel as the game goes on, like a run that you misfit in the first half, all of a sudden you're fitting it correctly now. So I think that's it. It's when they play good complementary football, the Commanders, that it just helps the defense at every possible turn. And I think the guys are smart enough. They're well coached. The coaches on the sideline do such a great job of making corrections after every single drive and every single series. That I think that's part of it. That's part of why it's better. And it's going to be a big deal against Philly, obviously. But they've shown at times this year they can really batten down the hatches and stop those explosive runs.
And again, like they did a good job of making sure outside of the Williams one, which is just a special play with his speed and kind of some things that go, you know, they really got, that was like a great scout. Like Quan Martin's doing a really good job coming down and fitting the run. The problem is the run gets reversed in the other way and now he's trapped inside and bad things happen. But like outside of that one, even on a couple 30 yarders, like they make the tackle in the end and then make you earn it. And that's the thing with Saquon is, can you do that? And just give up 30 as opposed to giving up 70. And the Rams found out what happens when you give up 70. All right. That's our show for today. Don't have to do the special teams thing at the end because we did it in the middle. That's Logan Paulson. He'll be on Command Center and all the shows that he's doing with the team over on the Commanders YouTube page. Of course, I'm Craig Hoffman and I'll see y'all on the radio on the Team 980 starting at 4 o'clock. We have so many great guests this week. My pal Robert May is going to join us on Wednesday. Ian Eagle's calling the game for Westwood One. He'll join us on Friday. We're also going to do a crossover edition, I believe, with our Philly podcast. We did that last week with Detroit. That went well, so I'll do that tomorrow. And then Thursday, we'll be back with our film preview of the Philadelphia Eagles NFC Championship Showdown. NFC Championship Showdown against the Commanders. For Logan, I'm Craig. We'll see you next time. Subscribe wherever you're watching or listening right now. This is Take Command. You heard what I said. You can subscribe to Take Command anywhere you get your podcast. Of course, if you miss any part of this show, including that aforementioned interview with Robert Mays, you can check out the Hoffman Show podcast as well. And coming up next, as promised, Santana Moss. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Scheduled to catch up with Santana here. We're supposed to have him at 5, and then their shows are running late, and I guess they're still running late. So we will get to Tana when we can. If we got to bump it back to tomorrow, we will. We'll definitely have Scott Pioli an hour from now. Or I'll cry, Anthony. We can't have multiple people that have to shift around on us on one day. I can take one. I'm a tough guy. Two.
I'll cry too.
I got tears. Speaking of tears, that's another segment we do. This is Competition Wednesday because it's Wednesday at 5:30. So we're going to roll with that in lieu of Santana here. And first, Anthony, we will need to go over the results of last week, and then we need to pick Conference Championship Weekend. So are you ready to unveil the results from the weekend?
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I was born ready, Craig.
Okay, excellent. Fun fact, a week ago, when I wrote down these picks, I did not actually write down who made the picks on three of the four selections because my brain was not working because I was eating hot wings. Anthony, you might recall.
Yes.
Yeah. So the good news is the way this worked out, it actually is okay. Because there was only one game missed between the two of us, and that was the one I wrote down. TBD if that's good for me or good for you. Let's go chronologically. Now Anthony is antsy. Now Anthony does not know what to think of this segment. The Kansas City Chiefs were 7.5-point favorites by the time that we got a hold of this line on last Wednesday. Despite the field goal shenanigans, they covered 7.5. There were places where this became 8.5 later in the week, and that on the safety at the end of the game
cost a lot of people money, or made people money, depending on which side of the coin you were on. I do believe that's a game that I picked, Anthony. I have that down as correct for me. So that is a 1-0 for me.
I'm proud of you, Craig.
Thanks. You took the Washington game.
Yep, I did, sir.
Where the Commanders were 10-point dogs. Anthony, I do not recall how that game wound up.
Oh, you don't? I do.
How did that go?
It ended with a Washington Commanders left-hand up win, baby.
It sure did. They covered and then some. By the time kickoff rolled around, like almost 60% of the cash in Vegas was on Washington, which should have told you that Washington was winning that game. Or was on Detroit. It should have told you that Washington was winning that game, because that's how that goes. But yeah, so that's 1-0 for the both of us. Anthony, the next game was the Rams and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Ouch.
And the spread in this game was 6.5. And on the Monday show with Tony, I picked the Philadelphia Eagles to cover the 6.5.
Mm.
Unfortunately for you, in a hot wing induced something, I changed my mind by the middle of the week and I picked the Rams. This is too stupid to make up. We have the video if you want to go double check it. But I have written down LAR plus 6.5, which would mean that I went 2-0, and the one game that I definitively had who picked it written down, because it must have been, I don't know why I did this, and again, my brain was on fire because of hot wings, was that you picked Baltimore -1. The Bills won that game, and thus I have returned to the mountaintop of competition Wednesday.
Oh, my God. Are you serious, Craig?
I am so serious, Anthony.
Are you sure that is how everything panned out?
100% sure? No. I am not operating at 100% right now because I don't feel great. I also was not operating 100% last week because my brain was melting due to a hot sauce named Ninja Napalm that I did to myself. But am I pretty sure that's correct? Yeah. Yeah, I am.
You're telling me that I must spin the wheel of mediocre puncher.
That is correct. Do you have to go get it from the other room?
I do, sadly.
All right, you want to go do that real quick? And just to think, Anthony, this could have been a private conversation between the two of us, or something that at least was mitigated until tomorrow, if Santana was done with the shows. But alas, TV production sometimes runs over, and so we have to fill time, and we have to do things that, you know, when they don't get moved around, would be at this time. And luckily for us, we had Competition Wednesday in the bank, and now you, me, God, and everybody knows that I have broken my streak. That not only did I break my streak where I was losing, but I was heinous, and I did it with a perfect week. By the way, we will pick this weekend's games coming up in a second as well. We'll also react to some of the coaching news around the NFL, but Anthony is slowly, and I do mean slowly, but surely, bringing the Competition Wednesday Wheel of Mediocre Punishment back onto his side of the studio. There he is, now emerging in the camera frame. Now we have to get this sucker set up. Again, some of the punishments are an ice bath, which we still both owe the show. There's hot wings. I will not make you do the Ninja Napalm. As someone who does not like hot and spicy food, I will give you the less spicy of the two sauces if you roll hot wings. So you got that going for you, which is nice. You got 100 push-ups potentially on there. All the fantasy stuff is off the table. Anthony, are you prepared now to spin the wheel of mediocre punishment?
I was born ready, Craig.
Okay. That's probably not something you should be proud of. You know, I was born ready to not spin it, you know? My picks reflect that. All right, Anthony, give it a spin. Nothing. Here goes nothing. Da-na-da-na. Da-na-da-na-na-na. What'd it land on, Anthony? Did it land on an ice bath? So that's a third trip through the ice that you got to make now, huh?
I got to spin it again.
Why do you get to spin it again?
Too many ice baths, I owe.
All right, spin it again. Land on hot wings. Oh my God, that was a hell of a spin, Anthony. It's still going. I can't read that. It's too small on the screen.
Fantasy sub.
Fantasy sub. All right, last time. Don't spin it so hard. That took too long. Got freaking Hulkamania over here. Don't give this guy 100 push-ups, otherwise we'll be here forever spinning this wheel.
We got lunch.
All right, Anthony owes me lunch again. It's like the fourth lunch you owe me this year.
To be honest, fantasy sub, lunch, for some reason, I just can't stop landing on those two. And oh, and ice bath, of course, too.
And ice bath. Ice bath. All right, so we still owe two ice baths. Anthony owes me lunch. And now we owe picks. We owe picks. I guess we can do these now, real quick, because there's only two games. And then, coming up next, there's a couple of these NFL coaching moves that I want to talk about real quick, since we have the time to do so. All right, first up, go in reverse order here. Buffalo at Kansas City. The line on Monday was Kansas City -2. The line as we sit here today is Kansas City -2. Oh, I guess I have to go first, right? Sorry, I'm out of practice. That wasn't a bit.
I wish that was a bit.
But it's not a bit. I am going to go with... I'm going to go... Oh God. I really want Buffalo to win. But this happened to me on Monday's show. I went to have the words come out of my mouth that were going to have me bet against Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game. And then I decided that was a dumb idea. Give me Kansas City because I like being right, even though I'm not rooting to be right on this particular occasion.
I love that for you, Craig. I think I would have gone the same way, just never bet against Mahomes.
Well, you have to make the same pick, Anthony, so we're both picking both games here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Chiefs as well. I will say the Bills do scare me, but the Chiefs do too. I got to go with the Chiefs, man. Every time I bet against Mahomes, I've lost. Every single time.
Right. It's just that's the thing. He's the boogeyman. Okay. The line has moved in the Philly-Washington game in Philadelphia's direction. Mm. It is now -6.5. It was 5.5 when it opened on Monday when I first laid eyes on it. And I still have not made up my mind on who I'm going to pick in the game. Obviously, I know who I want to win, but I have not made my my money line pick, my straight up who's winning pick yet. However, I feel pretty good about Washington covering the 6.5. So, Anthony, we're probably going to have to find a tiebreaker here because I'm guessing you are also putting your left hand up.
I am indeed.
Okay. May I interest you in the total in either one of these games?
Oh, my gosh.
The Bills and Chiefs are 47.5. The Commanders and Eagles are also 47.5.
If I had to choose one, I'll probably say the Eagles. Eagles, Commanders.
You would, and which side would you be on?
The over.
Oh, man, because I would be on the under of the other game.
The under of the Bills Chiefs?
Yeah.
I would too, to be honest.
This is going to be hard. All right, tell you what. Hopefully, we just carry this over to the Super Bowl because there's only one game to pick there.
Yeah.
So we'll cross that bridge.
But what if we both end up picking the same team?
I guess that is a problem, wouldn't it? All right, Anthony and I are going to put our heads together, not live on the radio, for a tiebreaker of some sort. I don't know. How many wins will the Wizards have this week? Maybe something like that. Don't look at me like that. I'm throwing out ideas. No bad ideas in a brainstorm. All right. When we get back, though, the Jaguars proving again that they don't know what they're doing. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Pick 6 at 6 might be coming at you at 6, or Santana Moss is. I think those are two pretty good options. So we'll see if the Tana Man is done at the studio and if he can still join us. And if not, that's all right. We'll try to catch up with him later this week. And you'll hear from Jaden. You'll hear from DQ. Ant, did we ever – I know Terry talked. Did we ever hunt down any of that stuff, or Frankie or anybody else that yapped today?
Yeah, they spoke. I haven't had a chance to cut those two as well.
Okay. Well, if you want to work on that now, I can make fun of the Jags real quick.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll let Anthony do that, and that means you get some Terry McLaurin. You get some some Frankie Louvu in your pick six at six, along with Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn. But today, the Jaguars did something they should have done 2 weeks ago. They fired their general manager, Trent Baalke. And this is nothing personal per se against Baalke, although I don't think he's particularly done a good job. But I think it's pretty clear that the coaching search that was happening there was being impeded by the fact that they had a very stupid setup in Jacksonville. And if you recall a couple weeks ago, I talked about this when this news came down. So there's this awkward, I guess it's a press conference, but it's really it's a virtual press conference. And I happened to be watching some tape of, I think it was a Week 18 game. Yeah, it would have been the Week 18 game, Cowboys Commanders. And I was sitting in my living room, and I was trying to keep track of the news of the day as coaches were moving. And so I put NFL Network on in the background. And NFL Network happened to carry this press conference live. And during it, all the questions, and by the way, it's a split screen. It's Shad Khan, the Jags owner, and Trent Baalke, there at the time, executive vice president or general manager or whatever titles he was carrying. And almost all of the questions went to Shad Khan. And a lot of them, awkwardly, because on the other side of the screen is Baalke, kind of boiled down to, like, why are you keeping this dude? And the answers were terrible, not only in their substance, but in the what was actually being explained. So Khan basically was like, he's built up a lot of infrastructure. He's hired a lot of people. We don't want to tear everything down. And we think that the problem here is the coaching, which, you know, if that was 100% true, then fine. And I don't think Doug Peterson did a great job and that he actually deserved to keep his job and all that kind of stuff, considering the talent that they had. But it sounded a whole lot like you could have just been asking those questions to Trent Baalke. And it seemed very much like Shad Khan, instead of being an independent owner who had consultants and things that he could go to say, like, hey, what do you guys think? Or had an acumen to really understand what he was looking at, got a set of answers from Baalke, who he clearly likes, and from Peterson, and he chose to believe Baalke, and then just assumed that that was the truth. And the reality is, it's not. And this is a many times over problem for the Jags, because Baalke before the season apparently told Shad Khan, like, oh my God, this is the best roster we've ever had. And Khan said that publicly. And then when it doesn't work, it's like, well, it's obviously the coach's fault. Not so much. This wasn't the best roster. Like, your GM's not that good at his job. And not only that, and here's the kind of Commander's angle to it, if you will, the thank God that's not us anymore angle, is Khan was bragging that he thought this job was really attractive. Because, oh, we have Trevor Lawrence, a quarterback, which that part of it is. But also, this guy, the head coach, gets to report directly to me, and so does Trent. They don't have, you know, you don't have to report to the GM. You have an open door to the owner. Imagine Adam Peters and Dan Quinn just not having to talk to each other. That it was designed that, like, no, you go pick all the players. You set the 53. You do all this stuff, and then you coach up what I give you. No, hey, we're trying to run this scheme. We need this kind of characteristic. Can you go find it? Yes. Not an agreeance on what gets a commander tag. Just a full-on separation of coaching and personnel. It's a stupid way to run a franchise, because it's not how football works. You need the right skill sets and the right mix of players and the right character guys and the right everything. And a GM should be hiring a head coach who he is in lockstep with the best consistent winners in the league. There is that outside of basically Howie Roseman, who, you know, Eagles head coaches are tend to have a little bit shorter tenure, but Howie's very, very good at his job. And very clearly, I think when Sirianni has a guy that at the very least they think can guide the ship in the right direction. We'll see moving forward. But, you know, Howie lost power back in the mid 2010s and then got it back because he was so good at drafting and selecting players and signing the right free agents and all those kinds of things. He actually is good at building the team, and that team then has been used well by a couple of coaches, and then there's been maybe a shorter leash because of whatever reasons. But the Rams, consistently good. The Vikings now over the past couple of years, consistently good. And again, these teams haven't necessarily won championships. The Rams did, but they're in the mix every year. What Detroit just built and what we hope Washington has built. There's a congruence, there's an alliance, there's an alignment. in the front office and the coaching staff that is essential to NFL success. And it's very clear that it took 2 weeks of trying to find a head coach in a somewhat thin and very selective head coaching market to have that realization perhaps come to Shad Khan. But here's the worst part. If I was Ben Johnson, I would have considered Jacksonville if I could have brought my own GM. Ultimately, Ben Johnson chose quarterback over quarterback and GM and bad owner. He's like, questionable owner, questionable GM, got my quarterback in Caleb. And that's where he went in Chicago. If they had just done this on the day that the season ended, does Ben Johnson look at Trevor Lawrence and the chance to maybe bring Lance Newmark from D.C. and go, that's the job that I want? Seems a question that Shad Khan's probably asking himself. And today, after Liam Cohen, the Tampa Bay Bucks offensive coordinator, turns them down, apparently Shad Khan got the message that nobody wants to work with Trent Baalke, and they're going to have to start over not only on their GM search with multiple candidates off the market, but their head coaching search in a very different light, run a different way without Baalke in the mix, which hopefully will be good for them in the long term, but just shows a total misunderstanding and something that the Commanders, in terms of the front office futility, had for a long time that, thank God, we don't have to deal with anymore. Softman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, the pick six at 6:00.